This happened for several days and I became more astounded at the subjects upon which I had written. I could not, without efforts and without definitely searching my limited imagination, have invented such stories as poured through me. Time after time my pen wrote. There was hardly a correction made in all the hundreds of words written, though I was never aware of what I was going to write. Yet my life went on normally enough. I still saw my friends, enjoyed watching television, read, shopped, drove about the countryside and was not aware of any personal communications from Francis between sessions. It was exactly as though I was simply registering and translating her thoughts at certain times. Yet when I read aloud some of the scripts to a friend living near, I was as astonished as was she that the stories were so fresh and intriguing, as if I had never been employed to write them. During this time though, I was perfectly aware that I was under compulsion to carry on with the work until all that she wished had been communicated. Francis' persistent dedication was still in evidence. I was the one most able to do what she wanted and what I realized she felt was the crowning of her earthly mission. Therefore she concentrated on me. I must admit I cringed as I envisaged the publicity to come, for I knew that she intended publication. Often I wondered how I would lace the criticism and possible ridicule such a book would arouse. But Francis' strong will persisted. It was, as ever, the will, too, good. These revelations must go out in the spirit of service in which they were sent into manifestation. Her dedicated self swept aside all obstacles I might put in their way. Many may ridicule, she insisted, but if only a few are strengthened in consciousness, and helped to live closer to reality, then our partnership has not been in vain. With this I must be content. That Sunday experience of soul, too, soul communion has not been repeated. Indeed it must be a rare occurrence, and I was most blessed even to have known it once. But the communications have gone on to the end and they now lie here on my desk, typed for publication. But Francis has proved even more than communication. She has shown to be possible that which she always advocated so strongly, that psychic and spiritual communication are but different levels of one spiral, that communion is of the spirit, and therefore of a higher level than psychic interpenetration or extra-sensory perception, that both methods will be demonstrable in the new age now approaching, and that the higher communion is to be opened through meditation and contact with the deep center of man. Francis always believed this. She was convinced of the fact of communion with the spiritual worlds and of the reality of the higher self in each one of us. She trusted implicitly in the survival of mind and personality beyond death, and she was reverently aware of the spirit within which urged her on, the Christ, in you of Christianity. Always she strove for a break through to spirit, and by this, I do not mean only psychic communication. Her belief was that, through meditation, through retiring into the deep center of oneself and finding the place of the silence of the soul, communion could be established with advanced souls, higher beings, great ones whom we call saints. This is the true communion of saints, a oneness with the divine company of heaven, resulting in a new intuitive perception of unity and inspiration for radiant living. This, she felt, was the message for the new age into which we are now emerging, a greater extension of man's consciousness, so that even during the limitation of earthly life, he can enter the beauty of the spiritual worlds and receive inspiration therefrom. She stressed, also, that man should realize and accept his place in a divine scheme. She believed intensely with the forward-looking thought of Pierre Teilhard de Chardin that, as he phrased it, co-extensive with their without, there is a within to things. She also believed that the last enemy that shall be destroyed is death. In the testimony which follows, Francis continues her mission. She has shown her experience of death and the change into a new conception of living, illustrating this with poignant stories of the effects of the death change on others with whom she has been brought into contact. She gives us freely of her further knowledge of the progress of the soul outwards, upwards and forwards into divinity. The scripts 5th of December 1965, 8:30 p.m. I have been able to come to you. Your husband over here has brought me. Yes. I know him well now. I always felt a kinship with him, even when I was on Earth.
Do you remember?
I like him. He has a great sense of humor, a kind or irrepressible fun. You two must have enjoyed each other's company. I am in a kind of rest home now. It is run by the sisters of the community to which I belonged when in incarnation. They are so kind and gentle with me. I am now lying in a bed, high up on a terrace, that looks out over a vast sunlit plain. It is a beautiful scene, and so restful. I am recuperating from the illness which brought disintegration to my physical body. I feel content and calm and at peace. I shall stay here. Indeed, I have already told Mother Florence that I want to work with her here when I am ready. Souls are brought here from Earth and from other places, but I do not know much of those places. When they are ready, they are nursed and taken care of here, as am I. After I have become adjusted to this life, I think I shall stay on here and teach with the sisters, if they will have me. And if I can really be useful. You see how my Earth psychology will come in useful, together with the explanations of the further stages of progress, when I have learnt more myself. How I shall enjoy correlating the two psychologies in any classes I have, and in individual talks. It is going to be rather like a return to the prison work I did at Maidstone Jail, only of course, on a different level. Here, there is no compulsory confinement, and no punishment, except what you mete out to yourself. You can come and go of course. But I realize already that you can only go elsewhere, when you are ready. I am so glad that I can continue to work. One loves to be useful, and I always loved my work, as you well know. Here, later on, I feel that I can put much of what I have experienced to good use. It will help me too. I have always been, by nature and inclination, a teacher, and it is a great joy to learn that one can still exercise one's skills in this new life. It will be good for me too, to do a job of work where I am not noticed. Beware of becoming noticed too much. Therein lies temptation. I have met Father Joseph, our Dominic. He is a wonderful person. He seems to emanate such goodness, love and strength. When I first became aware of him, I was immediately reminded of your description when you first saw him clairvoyantly. Rangy. Certainly his body is tall and loosely built. He wore the same brown habit with the red girdle, just as he used to wear when I first contacted him as our retreat priest in the community. I'll try to tell you what happened. After the change was over and I was free of my earthly covering, I woke up here in this hospital of the rest home. My room had no walls and the sunlight seemed to flow over one all the time. I opened my eyes. Or I came back to consciousness. And there was Mother Florence just as she used to be and as I had remembered her for so many years. She took my hand. She said, "So you have arrived safely?" But I must have been very weary, for I can remember little more. I think I slept again. A long time later. It seemed a long time later, I found myself lying here gazing out at this tranquil and beautiful scene around me. Suddenly I knew that someone was beside me. I looked round and gave my attention to this new idea. There was Father Joseph just as I had always remembered him. He sat down beside me and took my hand in his. "Well, sister?" he said. That was all. Just well, sister? As if we were both back in my study in the college in South Africa. I felt such power and strength flow out from him. I think I must have wept. It was all too wonderful. He didn't say much, or I was too tired to pay attention. For I must have drifted into sleep again. When I gathered my thoughts together again to speak to him, he had gone. But he'll come again. Mother Florence tells me now that he comes quite often to see her patients. Oh. But I shall not be a patient here for long, you know. As soon as I can reorient myself sufficiently, I shall be teaching or tutoring again. It is the service I can give. I'm already learning so much. I have discovered that I can use telepathy both ways, to receive and to relay. There are not the difficulties here that we experienced on the Earth. This holds out all sorts of exciting possibilities. Indeed, I am already able to contact your mind, and what is more important, to hold that contact so as to pour ideas out to you. This has infinite possibilities. I'll try to come to your group. I know that you are meeting. Everything it seems is known here. I must break off now. I will talk to you again. I begin to know you now in quite a different way. I see your light. Later you remember that, when I was in the body, I once said to a prisoner at Maidstone, following a discussion on the possibility of life after death, a minute after you die you will be exactly the same. You recall, also, that that very statement was the first psychic message you gave me? You spoke the name of this prisoner who had died soon after my talk, without our meeting again, and you said he wants me to tell you that the last words you ever said to him were absolutely true. Well, I reiterate this statement, now that I too have made the transition, in full agreement with all that was implied in it. For it is so. As soon as I was able to bring myself to a conscious state of mind, after my withdrawal from my worn, out body, I knew that I was the same in essence. True, I felt light, and there was a new sense of freedom that was bewildering. I was the same. Yet not the same. With a flash of realization I decided that I must be stone deaf, for I could no longer hear any of the usual sounds of everyday life. The chatter and movement of human beings around me. The whistles of trains, the twittering of birds. There were no noises in this new consciousness. One of my first recollections was I am still conscious. The change has taken place. But I cannot hear, neither can I see. And for a space of time I seemed to lose my identity. I recall endeavoring anxiously to pierce through this new state to recall memory. Who am I? What did I do? It was a strange, almost eerie experience, for the name I had borne for over 70 years eluded me. At length I recall telling myself to give it up and go to sleep and, in a way, this is what I must have done. At least consciousness went from me. I remembered nothing more. How long this went on I have no possible way of knowing. Perhaps in Earth time, for a very short space. But when next I came back to consciousness I seemed to be pulling myself up out of a thin sea of silver. Those are the only words I can use to describe the experience. And the first face I saw was the smiling one of my dear mother in religion, Mother Florence. I was so overwhelmed I couldn't speak. From then on I remember that I seemed to be in and out of consciousness. But now I found that I was lying in an open porch with a vista of blue and silver before me. This was beautiful beyond words and calming to my spirit. Trouble, anxiety and all sense of loss abated, a great feeling of peace enwrapped me. This is it, I kept assuring myself in wonder, I have made the change. I realized then that I could both see and hear as before, only now in a more intense way. I thought immediately, I wonder whether I can get through. I must tell Helen about this. Later, as I grew more accustomed to this new consciousness, I was able to commune, I cannot explain this by any of our former terms, with both Mother Florence and Father Joseph. How delighted I was to meet them! And to know that Father Joseph was indeed the same splendid, wise soul I had known, in my community days. He was again able to help me much. He gave me confidence. I felt as if I was convalescing. As indeed I suppose I was from the effects of my last painful illness. It was borne in on my thoughts that an aura of sadness surrounded me. They will be burning my body, I said to myself. Immediately an intense desire filled me to be again with all those friends I had loved and those who had loved me, at this solemn ceremony. In an inexplicable way, and due no doubt to my intense desire, I was able to be present with you all in mind and consciousness, whilst still lying here in this silvery light. I wondered if this was what astral traveling must have been like, but it was a wonderful experience. I saw you all. I was grateful to those who had journeyed to Maidstone to be present at these last rites. I gloried in the beautiful flowers. I wanted to weep at Richard's mystical interpretation of the change which had separated me, though only seemingly, from you all. I longed to say thank you to those who had made my last days on earth comfortable. I read the thoughts of Bertram Woods that the fellowship was losing a tireless worker. I felt lifted up in mind and soul because I was being missed, because there was so much affection and because Richard was wisely making this a hopeful farewell, without the heavy burden of emphasized sorrow and mourning which would have saddened and distressed me. Then, just as inexplicably as I had become part of these scenes, it all faded. I was lying here, at peace. So this is death. I recall saying to one of the sisters who was beside me, life separated by density, that is all. Elation filled me. I knew now that I could tune in and even see the earth plane, if desire was strong enough to loosen the barrier between your world and my new one. The possibility rested with me. This, I realized, was my first lesson. Now I dwelt in a realm of thought, and such thought power, when rightly implemented, can penetrate the dense plane which is the world of human habitation. I did not feel that I had really gone away into a far country. I could still keep in touch. With this blessed feeling of consolation I must have drifted again, or slipped into a state of passivity. My next experience came with a strong thought, Exeter. Again, I was with you in spirit, in the vast cathedral where the small gathering to remember me was almost swallowed up in the big empty building. This time I was less emotional. I was able to participate in an objective way. My mind could apprehend the order of service. I felt humbled as never before by the kindliness of the souls gathered in that chapel, by the excellently thought, out oration of Colonel Lester, by the constructive aura of the prayer forms as well as by the expressed faith of that memorial service. This is a change you will all make, some very soon, I recall thinking, and then truth will become apparent. How I longed to materialize before you to show there is no death, but that was beyond my power to do. By the time the London Memorial Service was held I had progressed sufficiently in this method of extension of consciousness to be able to make my presence known to those who could open their minds to this new dimension of thought. I felt that certain present saw me or were aware of my presence with the sisters. To me this was uplifting and comforting. I relaxed into peace. Life goes on for me now on a fuller and more abundant scale of living. 12th December. I am remaining in the rest home, though I am now occupying a cottage of my own. It is a lovely peaceful little place, with a very pretty garden. More about this presently. I still belong to the home of course, and I go back there frequently. I have been having long talks with Mother Florence, and with Sister Mary and Sister Hilda. They explain this new adventure to me. For this is an adventure. That is how I feel about the new life I am now living. It is an adventure. Probably not permanent, for nothing is permanent, not even here. But it is truly stimulating and very satisfying. This can be described as a stretching of the mind period. Do you remember how, in the last years, we used to talk and talk, threshing out points of experience, discussing and planning future work? This was, usually I recall, on a Sunday morning over the coking, up of our old boiler. Well, then, we were both on the outside of experience, looking inwards. Now the process has been reversed. I am on the inside, looking outwards. I still have the same experiences, the same problems, the same hopes, with even greater and wider aspirations for work, only now I view them from an entirely different angle and with far greater dawning comprehension. Now I am learning to apprehend the meaning of much that happened to me. I see it as a background pattern. In a way I am beginning to realize the effects of my thoughts and to view the events that were set in motion by these very thoughts and ideas. This is indeed a most sobering exercise. When in the body one is so limited by environment, emotions, difficulties, that it is very hard to judge accurately such results as might possibly ensue from the planning. And when we do try to assess the value, we are so often wrong, because we ourselves, our small egotistic selves, get in the way and deflect the purpose. Here we live so much more in the realm of mind. As we ponder over an experience or a purpose, the mind stretches out to see all sides of the problem. This is a new and not always exciting or pleasant experience. It is rather like a chain reaction. Much more potent and real than the old association of ideas of earth psychology. Here, as one thinks, one is, I'll try to make this clearer. There is no compulsion, of course, to review one's past life on Earth as soon as one arrives and the new life here begins. Some take a long while to tackle the problem. They dread to see the effects of mistakes and failures. Some of our patients here have got stuck. And that is where I, who myself am undergoing this kind of mental and spiritual psychiatry, am able to help them. That is partly why I have elected to stay on here for a space. I shall stay until my own course has become clear, both past and possible future, and until I have been able to rectify the places in the chain where I have failed. My experiences as a teacher, a religious, a psychologist and an earnest seeker after the spiritual life are of great value now. I have some background on which to draw and which might, and sometimes does, help those who are too timid, or frightened, or guilt-ridden, to attempt the work for themselves. Besides, you know the old adage, you are a teacher, that you learn by teaching. I'm doing just that now. The method here is interesting and provocative. Somewhere in the deeps of my mind, two blueprints are brought forward into my consciousness. These are so clear that I can, literally, take them out, materialize them and study them. One is the perfect idea with which my spirit went bravely into incarnation. The other is the resultant of only a partially understood plan. In fact, my life as it was actually lived. It was a shock to me, and a very salutary experience, to find that these two plans differed exceedingly. And yet, one learns so much by facing the results. In a way, the blueprints resemble maps, with colored places, and light and dark patches, and a kind of glowing sun for the high lights. First of all, the mind looks at the whole comparison, and sets the blueprints side by side. This is the first shock, a true humbling of yourself to find that you did so little when you would have done so much, that you went wrong so often when you were sure that you were right. During this experience, the whole cycle of your life term unfolds before you in a kaleidoscopic series of pictures. During this crisis, one seems to be entirely alone. Yours is the judgment. You stand at your own bar of judgment. You make your own decisions. You take your own blame. You are the accused, the judge and the jury. This is where quite a few souls in this rest home have become immobilized. Their pictures were too searing in their exposures. So we try to help them along, but only when they have made the inner desire to right their wrongs. Until that decision, I do not know what happens to them, but I should think that they are prisoners of the self. Immediately they become ready to face themselves again, they are guided to these beautiful and peaceful homes. Here, the sisters devote their love and thought, their skill and experience, to aiding the stumblers. The second stage of this recapitulation starts when the soul feels strong enough and calmed sufficiently to take the earth life, round by round, so to speak. Then the blueprints are brought into the mind again. Only this time the start is made from the moment of departure from the body. The mind works slowly, oh, so slowly, backwards through one's experiences. I am not confessing where I have reached in this exercise, but I will tell you that now you seem no longer alone. Someone is beside you. Whether it is your own high spirit or a great helper, I have yet to discover. Only now, as you ponder, work out, go over, tabulate and judge what you did and why and what were the results, good or bad, you are gloriously aware of this great being beside you, giving strength, peace, tranquility and helping with constructive criticism. This is a wonderful experience, though harrowing at times, but very cleansing and bringing new hope. Lots of those here have got stuck on their first picture. So we, the sisters here in the home, try to link up with these great ones and bring help and strength to the stumbler's level. Mother Florence is marvelous at this. She has a real technique, and this technique is what I am trying, not exactly to copy, but to adapt to my own particular methods of work. I must tell you about my garden. Yes, it is quite lovely, and I still do gardening. Oh, not in the same way as when you used to look at me on my knees grubbing at the soil and say to yourself, there she is again, she shouldn't be doing it. No. I still go on my knees, but in a different way and not to grub in the soil. That has a double meaning. There is a little patch in my garden which is bright with golden flowers. Do you remember the yellow escutcheon which used to flame all along the border in my garden at Addington? Well, I have a corner of flowers, not escutcheon, but of the same type, golden and glowing. At least, they do not always glow. I have to keep them glowing by gardening. That is, I pour light and love into them and over them, rather in the same manner as watering and nourishing them, and they answer, or respond, by growing profusely and gloriously golden. You remember the secret place of our meditations? I call this golden patch my secret garden, and some of the patients, those who are trying to become unstuck on their first exercise of recapitulation, come and visit me. We talk and then I guide them to my golden garden, and there they lie and relax and tune into the higher thoughts of the great ones. I thrill when I see some of the results. There was one man in the wards. He had been brutal and bitter to his wife and family. Now he is stuck. He has spent a long period of your earth time, though there is no time as such over here, since his change over to this life, in being tied to the places and the people where his cruelty and his bitterness had been exercised. Now he is here, and is trying to go on. But the film reel of his life appalled him, and he has become completely immobile. He visits me and we talk and talk, rather as I was able to do with some of the prisoners at Maidstone Jail. Last visit I introduced him to my secret garden. He began to relax. I could see it. Some of the imprisoning aura of fear and remorse began to melt away. He lay there amidst that golden light for a very long time, and when I did go out to him he smiled. It was the first sign of lightness I have seen in him. He said, "Oh, sister, I feel so much better. Can I come to your garden again? You see how this work is done. It helps me and it helps others. Because this plane is only a few rungs or so higher than the earth plane, there are the same conditions, hospitals, as with your civilizations, and prisons, only here they are self-made. I will come again and talk. Bless you." 18th December. No. I did not want to leave the earthly life. I felt that my work had not finished. I tried hard to ignore the deterioration of the body and I prayed to be allowed to remain for some years longer to accomplish the plans for spreading such knowledge as I had gained, amongst others. But I am content now. Again, I have been studying the blueprint of these last years in the light of this new understanding with which I am learning to review the past. This new angle of approach, which is a deeper understanding, has been fostered in my mind. I still have a mind, thank God, partly by this new freedom from the demands of the body, the emotions, and the pressing of others upon my will, but partly by the wise counsels of dear Mother Florence, of my sisters and of Father Joseph. Sometimes we have a round table conference here, rather like a council meeting, and then I put all the questions that bother me to wiser minds than mine. Always I receive answers that fully explain, even though I sometimes have to rationalize the meanings to my own particular conception. This is a slow process. I progress slowly. But then you know that I had that kind of a mind, which ever needed to read and read, and seek, and absorb, and even then to rationalize the knowledge gained to my own satisfaction. Believe me, I did not jump out from the community in which I was professed until after I had sifted and digested the evidence for deeper stratas of psychic and spiritual needs. It took me months of study then, reading and meditation, to make up my mind to such a drastic step. Now, looking back, I see the pattern clearly. I do not regret it. Here all is understood and judged on a wider basis. This is no longer a narrow denominational community. This is a wide and willing service. And all is understood and viewed with compassion. I am exactly the same person now. I still have to go over and over again in my mind the possibilities I had when on earth, the failures and mistakes I made, in the light of this new approach. I still balk at admitting much that was, perhaps, reprehensible, and which could have been managed without my human bungling. But here one does not waste effort in regretting blindly. There is too much to learn in a positive manner and to apply to one's future progress. And always there are souls in far worse predicaments from whom lessons can be learned. I speak of the patients here.